morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to those of you who are open to the realization or have come to recognize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, counterproductive. I am Yana. If you'd like to join us anytime over the next couple of hours, toll free 877-300-7645. We are live today. We were nearly dead yesterday. The reason that there was an archive on yesterday's program is moments before the program was to go live, I was out working in my garage, and I was bit by a spider and had a horrible reaction to the bite, about a 10-inch diameter lesion on my my leg where the spider had bit me within moments of the bite. And so, having never seen anything like that, I knew that I was in trouble. My decision would be to put some Benadryl on it and come on down and do the show. My wife, I showed it to her, and she says, no, we're going to the hospital. Fortunately, I have a wife, and I went to the hospital, told Scott to play an archive, because at the hospital they diagnosed the bite as a brown recluse, and there is immediate treatment for it. If you get antibiotics, a certain blend of antibiotics, within an hour of the bite, the symptoms are nullified, and there is a complete and quick recovery over the 10-day period of the antibiotics. If you don't, it is a flesh-eating venom that even with young people you can lose an arm or a leg. So I was pleased that it was diagnosed and resolved, and so here we are today with a live show as opposed to a dead show. Now, there was I don't want to pretend like this was a life transforming moment, because it wasn't. My life transforming moments is really coming to understand the Torah, coming to know Yahweh, understanding the terms and conditions of His covenant, and embracing them. That's a life-transforming moment for me. But I am going to tell you that that two of the things that, in fact, I have three stories that we're going to be sharing. One superficially, two in depth over the next few days. That there are things that I've been forecasting now for over a decade, and they are materializing before our very eyes. The first of those is that I had forecast that America would be plunged into anarchy, and that the plunge would be principally economic, and discussed how this would happen and why it would happen. And over the next few days and weeks, I'm going to share with you how this is going to happen, so that you have some indication as to what the future is going to be for this country. Second, I had to forecast for a long time that the New World Order is going to be led by a cast of characters who would be equal parts socialist, secular humanist, read communist. They would be confessed to be Christians, and yet they would embrace and sympathize with Islam. And that it would be a combination of the world's most popular three religions, socialist humanism, Christianity, and Islam, that would be brought together as a new holy writ to lead the world to the darkest of dark sides. And I'm here to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that that the two most influential people in the world today, the President of the United States and the Pope, are both living embodiments of that idea, of that realization. The Pope is a communist, as is the President of the United States. They both embrace Islam, promote Islam, while professing to be Christians. It is exactly what I had predicted, and today we're going to spend considerable time on that topic. The third issue that we're going to develop over the next few days and weeks is another one that I think I began to talk to all who would listen about this about a decade ago, very, very long time ago. What I came to realize is that America has developed a religious zeal for the military. For those who don't want to say, you know, God bless, and want to come off as religious, the way that they show their passion and their faith is to thank the military for the service that they are providing, for keeping us free, for keeping us safe, for protecting us. Now, what I've said is that the military in the United States is actually counterproductive. We'd be better off without it. And I've told story after story explaining how disastrous our military has become. Well, there are two stories now that help emphasize this. Both of those stories are aspects of the U.S. military that I've been talking about now for a better part of a decade. The first is a complete breakdown of morality. Total and complete. And the New York Times reported yesterday something that I've talked about here on this program for years and overall for nearly a decade. That the Afghans that America has armed, enriched, and empowered are grotesquely more immoral, more perverted, more savage than the Taliban America went in to dislodge. And that not only is their propensity to commit gang rape of little boys, sodomy, and to turn young boys into sex slaves, and to do so at the commander level of the Afghan police and military. But they're not only doing it, they're doing it with the full knowledge of the United States military. And the United States military has an official policy that if you try to stop them, if you intervene on behalf of the little boys who are being raped, that you will lose your rank and you will be dishonorably discharged from the military. New York Times is now reporting on the stories of bachabazi, child play, boy play, that we repeated or we discussed at length on this program many years ago. And so we're going to consider that story. There's also another series of stories out also reported in the New York Times that suicides are rampant among those who have returned from Afghanistan and from Iraq. Now, the New York Times doesn't have a clue as to why the suicides are so high, but we've talked about them on this program. Imagine being told, being indoctrinated, that you're being sent overseas fighting for your nation's freedom when there is no threat to your nation in Afghanistan, never has been. Come to find out then that you're being told that you're freeing the people from the ruthless Taliban who abuse their citizens, only to find that your military and your government was empowering, was arming, was enriching those who were far more sexually perverted, those who were far more ruthless to their own citizens, with the full knowledge that they were raping little boys. Now, how would you come back from that and not want to take your own life to a country that had so disgustingly lied to you and to its own people? And so we're going to cover those stories. But today, the story I want to share with you is a story that tells me Pope Francis, the man who, for the first time ever as a pope, has been given an invitation to speak to a joint session of Congress. The man who has been an overt communist in most of his statements over the last 2 years is in America and has not only an entree to the White House where there's tens of thousands of Roman Catholics who are empowered in one place or another in this country, will be there to greet him. But then we'll go to and speak before Congress. I'm here to tell you that that man has an extraordinarily dark side. I think he's demon-possessed. And I'm going to share with you when and where that happened. This is a story that was in my inbox. Found it, I don't know if it was yesterday or today. Read it this morning. I'm going to share it with you and make some comments along the way. The dateline is Cordoba, Argentina. It begins, "The room is small and red. Heavy red curtains. A red tiled floor. A red cover on the bed. The only adornment in the room is a crucifixion. It looks like a prison cell," the author writes. "This is room number 5 in the Jesuit residence in Cordoba, Argentina. But in room 5, all you hear is the insistent echo of your own thoughts, your lonely prayers to a very faraway God. God is not far away. He does not want to hear our prayers. No one who knows him is lonely. And you never have to echo your own thoughts when you know him." Jorge Mario Bergoglio is the man's name. Bergoglio. He's the man who became Pope Francis. He spent 2 years in this red cell, a place that celebrated the death of God, as if it were an isolation prison. This is early as the 1990s. It was a dark night for a man now known for his megawatt presence. What transformed this man from solitary confinement to a megawatt star? Reminds me kind of Paul, doesn't it? A failure at rabbinic school. Isolated by the rabbis because he didn't play well with others. And he became the megawatt star of Christianity. And now we have Muhammad, a man ostracized by his own community. Couldn't find meaning or purpose in life. Sent away. Became religious, walked into a cave one night, met Satan there, just as Paul, searching for his identity, for his chance, met Satan on the road to Damascus. Yes, it was a dark night for a man now known for his megawatt presence and huge flock of followers. At the time, he was 50 years old, forsaken by his fellow Jesuits, left to suffer in silence. It was, he would later say, himself, a time of great interior crisis. Bergoglio's call to the priesthood was mysterious, interrupting an otherwise ordinary adolescence. In Buenos Aires, he passed a church and was lured like a fish on a line. The 16-year-old entered a dark booth where a priest was hearing the sacrament of penance. Something strange happened to me in that confession. Strange indeed. I don't know what it was, but it changed my life. I've said this many times. God has never entered a Catholic church. He is not to be found there. It is the furthest place from God on this planet. If you have your life transformed in a dark confessional in a Catholic church, if you're taken by surprise in such a dark place, it's Satan. He was demon-possessed. It was Bergoglio's first shock from what he called the God of surprises, in his own words. There are no surprises with God. He is who he is. He is consistent. He never changes. He says what he's going to do, and then he does what he says. If you're listening, you would never, ever be surprised by him. Ever. The God of surprises, the God who does things that have not been forecast, the God who is inconsistent and therefore surprising, is the God made by man. It's the Lord of Christianity. It's the Jesus of Paul. That is the God of death, the God of surprises. That's the God that changed the Pope's life. He would later learn that God's surprises cut both ways. No. The God who does not surprise cuts only one way. It's called the covenant. There's only one way with him, unlike Satan, who has many. The novices at the time, this would be at the place where Bergoglio was headed to become a Jesuit, managed every moment of every day down to the last minute. Yes, the Christian God, who is supposed to be so different than that Torah God. Yeah, they lay down the law. Complete hypocrites. They managed the novices' time down to the minute. Their schedule was set. Habits were established through a bureaucracy. You see, with the Jesuits, there is no free will. No. And that's what was drummed into this man who would become Pope. The austerity extended beyond the structured schedule. They used soap as toothpaste, and they used newspaper as toilet paper. Only last names were allowed to ward off familiarity. Maybe that's why they don't allow Yahweh's name. It sounds like the military, the author of this article wrote. This author then says, you know, I'm sitting here in Cordoba at this prison cell that held the current Pope for a better part of 2 years. And you look right across the square and you see the police station where scores of Argentines were brutally tortured and killed. And the arm's reach of the Jesuit facility As many as 30,000 Argentines were murdered during this period from 1976 to 1983, known as the Dirty War. It's a war that even though he was in a position of power in Roman Catholicism with the Jesuits in the center of this dirty war, the current pope did not engage. In fact, he is accused by two Jesuits of turning them into the military junta. The walls of what is now a museum of Jesuit life, right across from the museum of the police station, which is lined with pictures of the victims taken in their last moments as they were dragged into the police station. Jesuit residents during this period were repeatedly raided by the military junta. They were greeted by gunpoint. The message was clear. The Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, was being watched. In part, this is because the Jesuits across Latin America were communists. They promoted something they called libertarian theology. It was Christian communism. They not only reached out to the poor, they told the poor, just as had Lenin, to rise up against the establishment, to take what belonged to others, to establish themselves as the new dictators. We know every place that this occurred, tens of millions died. Between Russia and China, 70 million died. Well, the Jesuits, with their libertarian theology, promoted the same thing in South and Central America. Latin Americans would call them communists and Kazakhs. Bergoglio's colleague said that he kept a low profile. He would not praise the military junta, but he would never condemn it either. His job called for him to take a stand, but he didn't. He made the lives of Jesuits very difficult. And that is because there were Jesuits, as part of this communist ideology, that were urging the poor to confront their oppressors, as they had in China, had been urged to do in China and in Russia. Because the Jesuits have always seen themselves as those who would rise as the enlightened ones, the bearers of the light, to rule the world. They wanted the poor to rise up and to be the spirit under their wings. Well, during these days, the military junta seized two Jesuits. Bergoglio says that he persuaded them to ignore the military rather than to confront it. And yet it is these two men who blamed Bergoglio for their kidnapping, accusing him of not only leaving them unprotected, but fingering them to the military junta. Ah, but it served Bergoglio's interests. He had made a deal with the devil. During this time, Bergoglio became a demagogue. He was in charge, and he was meticulous, minutely micromanaging everything. He controlled the behavior of everyone under his jurisdiction. If you broke any of the rules, said one who was there, any of his rules, there was always some kind of social or moral sanction. Yes, he was the Jesuit of law. There was very little freedom in his Jesuit house. Seminarians would go straight from the classroom to the pigsty under Bergoglio, being told that they would find their God in all things, including the swine. Who is the God of swine? But many of the more intellectual Jesuits preferred classrooms to swine. They wanted more intellectual freedom, a rupture within the province under Bergoglio's domain emerged. The Jesuits outside Argentina, especially those committed to communism called libertarian theology, were being used by Bergoglio's methods. Yes, he was the new father, the new Stalin. But Bergoglio was a strong personality. The Jesuit says once he made a decision, no one could ever sway him to reconsider. Sounds like Paul, doesn't it? Even more troublesome for the province, his devotees, this would be Bergoglio's, not God's, honored Bergoglio's every word as if it were holy writ, as Christians do with Paul. And after holding high Jesuit office for 15 years, yes, he had attracted a sizable entourage. 40% of the Catholics in his province were devoted to him as an individual. The Reverend Arthur Lipscher, a Jesuit studying in Argentina during the 1980s, remembers Bergoglio's, his whole nature is brash and cocksure. He was hard to take. He's now Pope Francis, folks. Bergoglio's followers were certain that their leader had carved out the one true path. We talk about the one true path here a lot on this program. We didn't carve it out. Yahweh laid it out. His path is found in his Torah. It's not a surprise. There are no surprises along the way. We don't carve it out. We walk down it. But this man, no, he, as a Catholic communist, as a dictator, as a man in opposition to free will, he carved out a path and told all under his control to follow it. One of their first hacks, once the Bergoglio's term expired, was to decide what to do with him. So the Jesuits in Argentina sent him off to Germany to finish his doctoral thesis, perhaps hoping that his absence would heal the hostilities and the divisions in the Jesuit community that he had dictated over. But Bergoglio was 50 years old with decades of experience dictating to others, and he didn't much like just being relegated to student and having no influence or control in Germany. After 3 months there in Germany, Bergoglio decided to go home, rebelled against his Jesuit superiors. He looked like a different man, some Jesuits say. His hair was shaggy. His fingernails were long. He was unkempt. Bergoglio, for the most part, tried to stay removed. But the debate took on aspects of Latin American politics all around him. The campaign revolving around Caudillo, the strong man. He clashed with his new Jesuit superiors over this idea of the Argentine strong man, the dictator. Those who were there at the time said that their impression was that he was aware of what their goals were, and they were not his goals. So he stepped on the toes of a lot of people. Bergoglio's bosses finally decided they had enough of him. They shipped him off to Cordoba, to isolation, to his red, deadly prison cell. He understood that he had to remain silent and obedient because he was being punished. Bergoglio grew gaunt and spent hours and days and weeks and months in isolation. Some people say he was crazy at the time. The realization is if you don't agree with your superiors in the society, the Jesuits, then you have a problem with the entire society of Jesuits. It is a command and control regimen, just like Satan is accustomed to. It is normal for Jesuits to move from high to low assignments, but some said that Bergoglio's sentence, condemnation to Cordoba, was a punishment. They saw it in his face, that those who knew him at the time. I could see that he was going through a spiritual conflict, a very dark night. Well, part of me wants to go to the haunting voice from the Peruvian Andes, Bonners, who punctuated the commercial that we heard moments ago. That is a story that I'm going to save for another day so we can continue to look into the heart and soul of this demon-possessed priest, the man who became Pope. Drawing on the spiritual exercises that Bergoglio worked on at this time, we find that he began these spiritual exercises to exercise his interior darkness. And that those who are now looking for what happened here at that time have all found that no one wants to say. But that now the Pope, just giving the minimum glimpse into them, says that he began spiritual exercises, a set of prayers that he learned decades before as a Jesuit novice, as he explores the difference between self-pity and self-sacrifice. Why would anyone who knows God want to engage in either self-pity or self-sacrifice? Why would anyone engage in a spiritual exercise to differentiate things that have nothing to do with God? We don't engage in self-sacrifice. Not with the God of the covenant. And we should never engage in self-pity. This is an extraordinarily sick man who is now the megawatt star of Roman Catholicism. It could happen that one falls into a kind of a spiritual victimization, Bergoglio wrote, considering that they hurt me without any reason. Self-pity, Bergoglio. They hurt me without any reason. He sounds just like Paul. Spiritual victimization, he wrote. Kirk, this is a really dark and demented man. And to think that this man is viewed by 1.5 billion people as the closest thing to God on the planet tells you that the Christian God is extraordinarily demonic. The only thing, way to avoid such thinking, Bergoglio, Pope Francis concludes, is to stay humble. Keep praying. But what happens when God seems absent from the scene? That is the theme of another essay Bergoglio published when he was in Cordoba. He wrote an essay called The Exile of All Flesh. Who was it that began the great divide between the spirit and the flesh? Who is it that was opposed to the flesh? Paul. Was Paul not also demon-possessed by his own admission?
Oh, yeah.
This is really revealing. It tells you that the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church is demon-possessed. And he's a communist. And he is doing everything he can to encourage the incorporation of Islam into his demonic religion. And they flock to him. Roman Catholics holding him up as he feels the great source of light, the megawatt star of their religion. I didn't know any of this about him. It was a real eye-opener as I studied this man's dark past. Surprised by any of this?
This is, it's frightening. I'm just surprised it's so that somebody's actually talked about it.
Yeah. They, of course, are talking all around it. They're incapable of forming conclusions. But here he is with Pauline doctrine, the exile of all flesh. The essay began as notes for the spiritual retreat that Bergoglio led in 1990s, months before he began his own exile, leading the text to the shadow of premonition. He was now a prophet. We'll be back.